Hello and good afternoon, and welcome to the talk of the Art of Fleet-Wide Kubernetes Observability 3 Core Strategies. I'm Pratik Panda, a Site Reliability Engineer at Red Hat.
Hi all, I'm Mithali Bhalla, Site Reliability Engineer at Red Hat, and this is our first time at FOSTIM.
And this... So this talk is more based on our experiences of managing kind of a large fleet of clusters, and that kind of covers the strategies that you can use to ensure that your fleet of Kubernetes clusters is managed properly on the observability side. So moving to the agenda, what we'll be discussing today is what is fleet-wide observability at first, then looking at the observability challenge at scale, looking at the three strategies that we'll be discussing, and implementing the fleet-wide observability with an example, and then looking ahead to the future of observability on a fleet-wide level as well. Then concluding with the Q&A. So starting with what is fleet-wide observability? It would mean the observability at a scale where you have unified metrics, logs, alerts, traces, anything, and then you are able to perform your specific requirements at a fleet. So looking at the key aspects that you would take for a fleet-wide observability, it will be the multi-cluster correlation. Multiple clusters exhibiting the same symptoms should have a correlation. Then the centralized monitoring, giving you a view for everything at once across your fleet, whether it's your Kubernetes cluster or maybe your application running on those or any services that you might be running. A centralized monitoring view, unified pane of glass for them. Proactive insights that would include the early detection as well as the remediation of issues that could affect your fleet before they actually are kind of dangerous. Standardization would mean that we have a specific format for everything that we are capturing, everything we are monitoring as. And then we have scalability, that means as your fleet grows, your scale, your monitoring should be, your observability should be growing as well. Moving to the next slide is more on the observability on these challenge at a scale. So the first challenge would be high metric volumes. Let's say a single pod that can expose at minimum 20 to 30 metrics, and then adding a container, moving those metrics to 25. So let's say a single node cluster could easily expose 5,000 metrics running about 10 pods, and that would mean that you have quite a lot of metrics to work around. And what is useful, what is not, can be a challenge. And that would mean that you are stuck at a phase where you do not know what to work on. Then data silos, that would mean that there could be multiple systems that are running, multiple clusters running different kinds of workloads, different configurations, everything having different kind of logs, metrics, in a fragmented way. That would mean there are multiple challenges to work on at a unified manner. Then there's the performance trade-offs when you work with metrics as well for any smaller system, and when you scale those up, the challenge is with the cardinality stuff. What happens is when you scale up those metrics, the cardinality would give you with a lot amount of data, and that could lead to higher costs, and then the specific thing that you've been looking is not visible to you. Then you have the operational overhead. So operational overhead would mean that if you manage different environments, different configurations, there are a lot of different stuffs that could be going on, and there needs to be specific teams that needs to monitor on those. And that could kind of lead to kind of fatigue between those teams when they are kind of managing this at a scale. So looking at the strategy one, that is metrics, then what that would mean identifying what matters actually. So if we look at the Kubernetes metrics or metrics that are mainly useful, we have the infrastructure metrics that would include the CPU, memory, disk usage, network usage coming from the core infra itself, any cloud provider or bare metal, anything. Then you have the application metrics, request latencies, error rates, throughputs. Coming on top will be Kubernetes specific, maybe pod restarts, what's the node utilizations that you could be looking at, or any resource specific utilizations. And at the top is something quite important, is your specific SLO or SLI based metrics. That is the custom metric that you are working on, and that is where you provide your service on. So if we look at a simple diagram that could help is how can you make that a metric could be useful. So this flowchart might not be relevant at all times, but can provide you with a series of questions that can help filter out if you need to include it in your observability or not. Let's say, is it actionable? A metric should be providing you with an action to work on. Let's say a pod restart. So a pod restart, which is occurring multiple times over a course of a few minutes, that would mean you need to look and see what has happened, and maybe increase the resource for it, or see if the configuration is correct. Does it provide context? So if a metric does not, a metric should not be existing in isolation. It should have a context to it. Let's say there was a spike in CPU usage. It should correlate with a metric that should give you a part that this spike was coming from something. It's a higher workload demand or higher usage on your service itself. Is it predictive? So prediction here would mean that, let's say, the metric would allow us to know what possibly could happen if this metric is still continuing to exist. Let's say there is a high CPU spike that you would see for a specific pod. That could mean, or a high memory spike, that could mean a future potential out of memory issue that could be going on into the application that is running on that pod. And then, is it available in both real time and historic view? Something that is important for a good metric could be is, when you look at real time, it should indicate that you have an action to perform on, that you can work on this metric, figure out something, and then remove, clear out the root cause. And then historic view is something that would give you the insight and analysis part, that if over a period of, let's say, a few weeks, we see that at this point this metric was coming out, we identify what was the cause, and then we try to remove it. So this kind of covers what could a metric be useful with. And then some things that we can discuss on or related to metrics is what could mislead and how to avoid them. The first would be over-collection that we discussed, like a lot of metrics, what is useful needs to be defined on what are you providing the service at. Let's say any metrics that have a high signal, high value, are the prioritized metrics that you should be collecting rather than all of the metrics that you're picking up. Lack of standardizations. Multiple metrics may have the same, there could be metrics that kind of convey the same thing, but in different ways. But you need to figure out which metrics are more better and then move them into a consistent monitoring framework. Ignoring cardinality, that has the risk associated of, let's say, the performance as well as cost. So you need to be selective on the label usage itself. You need to know which labels are the ones that you would be using, and if not, look to avoid them. And then reactive monitoring. If you try to alert on everything that is based on the reactive metrics, let's say CPU spikes, that might not be the best way for your fleet to work on. So instead, you should be looking to prioritize on proactive and SLO-driven metrics.
Okay. Let's focus on the next strategy, which is from noise to actionable signals. Transforming from noise to actionable signals is very crucial for maintaining reliability, reducing alert fatigue, and for incident response. It basically involves refining raw system data to draw insights that can help in decision making and remediation actions. Now the big question. What actually makes an alert actionable in fleet-wide observability? And to get an answer to this question, there are a series of questions that you might need to go through. Let's say you have an alert trigger. The very first question should be, is the alert relevant to the system's SLOs or business goals? If not, then it is best advice to exclude it from the observability or just put it to silence test. The next question, does the alert provide clear and sufficient context? Let's say I have an alert triggered. Is it just telling me something, or it is actually telling me what component is expected, what component is failing, what are some outcomes that I might expect to see in some moment of time? The next question, is the alert actionable in real time? Does an on-call engineer will be able to solve this upcoming issue, or is it just a warning, or is it just a system info that is being shown to me? The next question, is the alert prioritized appropriately? Do I know what is the severity of this particular alert? How is my customer affected at the moment? If not, then I better be reassigning and readjusting its priority. The next B, can alert be automated? I would say this is a bonus golden question. If there are certain actions that can be automated and help me reduce the resolution time. And of course, then at the end, we get an actionable alert notified. Take this as an example. Let's say we have Kube API down alert. Now we all know it triggers when the Kube API servers are not reachable by my observability or by monitoring by within 15 minutes. I know that it is affecting my SLOs or business goals. I know it has certain clear context. I know Kube API is badly affected. I know it is actionable in real time. I know it has a very high severity. My customers' workloads will be badly affected. I know there are certain actions I can automate. For example, I can automate the process of restarting the Kube API pods. So I think going through this will help you get an answer whether an alert is actionable or not in fleet-wide observability. Now, we should also keep that in mind that all these questions might not be relevant at every stages, but they'll definitely help us optimize towards a mature observability scenario. Now, let's journey to the path of effective alerting, which basically considers two key principles: solid alerting framework and insights and analysis. In alerting framework, we consider a few things, such as early detection, which basically covers proactively identifying potential issues before they escalate. Intelligent alerting, we use some AI/ML-based anomaly detection so that we focus on real issues. Custom thresholds, we move towards dynamic thresholds instead of static thresholds so that false positives can be eliminated as much as possible. Context-rich alerts, enriching my alerts with insights such as logs, remediation steps including SOPs, that will help engineers to reduce the MTTR. Self-healing mechanisms, setting up auto-recovery actions such as restarting of pods and essential services. Next, we move towards insights and analysis. These cover a few methods, first being trend analysis, where we analyze the performance degradation over a period of time. Capacity planning, using historical data to foresee resource needs. User behavior analytics, it is a mechanism where I try to detect anomalies at an early stage as much as possible, and then try to forecast any upcoming potential issues. MTTR reduction, providing insights, logs, and correlation of logs and alerts helps to reduce the MTTR. And of course, incident postmortems, learning from incidents so that we do not see the repetition of similar issues in upcoming times as well.
Yeah. So that covers the second strategy that we had, and moving to the third is the correlation, that is connecting the dots. So the connection on this is through the context and the journey, that is the logs and the traces. So logs, as we know, is the detailed insights to any specific events, more like the why it happened, and traces is the visualization of the request. The traces might be or might not be relevant when you kind of work on a fleet level. It depends on what specific goal you have, what specific service you are working on, and combining or maybe using these is what we get on a correlated insights. So when we did this, this kind of gave you the idea on the three strategies and how do you the complete fleet-wide observability picture look like. It's a kind of the common area between metrics, alerts, the logs, metrics being the what's happening, alerts, when does it need attention, and logs or traces, why is it happening. And when you kind of focus on the correlation part, it will help you combine signals to find the root cause, to find the solutions that you are looking for much faster and kind of help us resolve the issues much faster.
Now let's see how we implement fleet-wide observability. And this will primarily involve leveraging the concepts of SLOs, SLAs, and SLIs. Now how we decide SLOs in fleet-wide, less than 95% of our clusters are unable to meet the requirement of getting upgraded within 2 hours. Now we check if an SLO is being breached, we trigger an alert for that, and then we investigate and resolve accordingly. Once the incident is resolved, the issues are all in place, we do some post-incident actions, such as revisiting our error budget burn, and then reviewing and adjusting our SLOs, and then the cycle goes and goes on and on. Some benefits of SLO-driven approach. Scalable reliability management. Now this provides in a uniform environment for troubleshooting and monitoring, decreasing cross-service dependencies, and providing better user experience. Proactive issue management. As we just discussed, with error budget framework and alerting and insights, we are proactively working on issue management. And of course, enhanced user experience, wherein we are focusing on customer impact and we are trying to reduce the downtime as much as possible. Aligned goals across teams. As uniformity comes in, we have unified metrics, we have prioritized efforts, everyone knows what they have to do. And of course, this means that our goals are aligned. And of course, this overall indicates that our environment is continuously improving. Our observability, the fleet-wide observability as such, is evolving in an effective manner. And of course, business-driven observability. We are able to align our technical and business needs, and we are providing end-to-end visibility, which is further increasing our customer impact, because at the end of the day, if customer is happy, we are happy. Looking ahead, the future of observability, AI-driven insights. AI is going to play a huge role in observability by enabling to provide resolution to problem, detecting anomalies, and of course, identifying issues. Cloud-native and cross-cloud provider. Observability is going to evolve to support and enhance more of the cross-cloud workloads, providing more insights. At the time, do not increasing the performance overhead. Automated remediation. Observability is going to move towards proactive monitoring rather than passive monitoring, wherein identifying issues, recovery actions are going to be all automated, requiring less and less human intervention. Open standards and interoperability. Open source is going to be the backbone of observability, supporting vendor neutral and flexible integrations. This is all we had today in our kitty, folks. We would like to have any questions or any discussions you might want to take.
Any questions? And please, we do 5 minutes Q&A. If you have the time, stay seated, because if half the room leaves now, we will not be able to understand the questions and answers. Does anyone have a question?
Hi. You said that we should trigger the alert when the SLA is breached. Shouldn't we trigger when we measure that it will be breached in some time so that we are proactive working on the incident before the SLA itself is breached?
I'm going to answer that with a question. How do you know that you're close to an SLA being breached?
Want an SLA after of 1 hour, so you have an SLA for the SLA itself?
That's a good thing. So what I would recommend is the approach I've seen being implemented is, let's say I talked about a 2 hour window, right? At my internal level, I realize that up to, let's say 1 hour, it is okay if the alert is not progressing. But if the 1 hour beyond that is something that might become troublesome, so I set up my alerting at that level only. Let's say a control upgrade is delayed, is what I get triggered at. So I am already getting alerted per cluster level when an upgrade is in between failing. So the thing that I talked about, the SLO being breached, it is at level, let's say, when you are getting continuous alerts of different clusters that the upgrade is between halted. So that is already set up in a proactive. Yeah.
Do we have more questions?
So you mentioned that we should enhance our alerts with logs, right? Alerts are based on metrics. How can we identify which logs to add to those specific alerts? And if you can give an example as well.
I think I can take that. So that depends on the type of alerting that you would be focusing on and also on the observability tool that you might be using. There are certain observability tools that kind of provide this in the view at a unified level, let's say Dynatrace itself, that has logs, metrics, everything at once, and that has the maybe the capability, and I think that has the capability as well to kind of do something like a log-based alerting as well when you do the metric-based. So both metrics and logs kind of combine and do the alerting. If you work on something, let's say, at a very cluster level and then you are integrating something like PagerDuty to it, it would mean that you reference something on an SOP-based level that the engineer kind of works on to kind of figure out from that alert what the logs needs to be, what the logs are at that point of time. So it's kind of enrichment of alerts can be depending on what the scenario is and what the actual workload being affected. If you are sending all of the metrics logs at once, that could mean you can enrich it. If not, if it's on a more, let's say, a wider level, that would mean the engineer needs to do a bit of research before you get the exact cause for that alert.
More questions? Oh, they're in the back.
Hi, a very basic question. Do you have any publication of like what are the basic SLIs indicators or what are the basic SLOs for different parts of your Kubernetes cluster as well as your whole fleet? Some kind of examples that we could use in our deployments, and how do you define those SLOs?
No, please, you take a mic because there's people watching the videos and streaming.
Okay, so to answer that, that will depend upon service to service. For example, if you talk about just Kubernetes, let's say we talk about upstream Kubernetes. So you can refer the Google's guidelines on that. Google has already published on what is being happened and where. And since we work on managed OpenShift, that is our service. I don't think that is publicly open as of now. But for definitely you can refer to the ones that are available by Google. And Google SRE book is the Bible for managed services when it comes to Kubernetes. So you'll find everything there. And a bonus, Atlassian also has some of that available. So it's just all available openly.
Yeah, and something to add is like it's a continuous evolving process as well, like we mentioned. So something that you might have, when you take it at a very basic SLO level, you try to improve it based on what your team is requiring or what you are actually providing out. So it kind of goes on evolving as well.
All right, one more question? No? Then thanks again.